The Packers earned a season-opening victory over the Chicago Bears 31-23. And to discuss that and a whole lot more, we bring onto the show Rob Reichel, author of Leaders of the Pack, Star, Favre, Rodgers, and Why Green Bay's Quarterback Trio is the Best in NFL History. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Green Bay Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about a Green Bay Packers season-opening victory over the Chicago Bears. To discuss that, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning, Mr. Rob Reichel, author of Leaders of the Pack. Mr. Reichel, how you doing this morning?
Well, first of all, Brian, Mr. is my father, but I do appreciate the kind acknowledgement, and I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very good. I think this is the third time we've had you on the show to plug a book, so I think that's really cool. But if you don't mind, can we start with yesterday's game and then discuss the book in just a few moments?
However you want to do it, that's fine.
All right, sounds good. We got a lot to talk to about this season-opening victory. So we can make the connection to your book, however, because one of its three subjects played pretty well yesterday. Could you find any fault in Aaron Rodgers' game on Sunday?
No, Brian. I mean, it would be hard to. It was, you know, I guess in a way it was kind of workmanlike, Brian. It was nothing over the top and flashy. They're missing their home run guy, obviously, now in Jordy Nelson. So I think this is maybe how they'll have to play a little bit more this year, with some of the 8 and 10 and 12 play drives that eat up 6-7 minutes of clock versus the ones that, you know, were so quick splash, the 4-play 80-yarders we kind of been accustomed to, where they'll hit a home run along the way and the defense is back out there in 2 minutes and 12 seconds or something like that. You know, but Brian, from the standpoint of these defensive guys who I've talked to about this, obviously nobody wants Jordy Nelson to be gone. It's a huge loss, you know, to their season. But if there is any upside to it, I do think this is how the Packers are going to have to, you know, play offense this year, and this will be their best path to scoring 30 points a game, is maybe to chunk out some of these longer drives. I think at the end of the day, that could be a positive for this defense. And in past years, Brian, you certainly remember 2011 is kind of a prime example. The year they scored 560 points, they were so quick strike that year that the defense would get off the field and barely catch their breath and be back out there again. And I don't think that's going to be the case this year, Brian. I think this offense is going to have to rely on Lacy a lot more, on Richard Rodgers a lot more. You know, some of the underneath stuff with some of these receivers, I don't think you're going to see a lot of the over-the-top 60, 70, 80-yard touchdowns like a lot of these Packer fans have become used to. And the byproduct of that, Brian, is you actually could have a fresher defense come December.
Now, that's interesting. You can be good that way, too. A little bit different from previous years, but you can be good, too. It's almost as if I think James Jones never left, which I thought was pretty remarkable considering he and Rodgers both had only 6 days to prepare together. Did the trust Rodgers displayed in Jones surprise you at all?
A little bit. And even Rodgers admitted after the game, Brian, you know, he had said to Jones prior to the game, you know, I could be going Devontae Adams' way a little bit more today than yours, but just the matchups really did favor that. You know, Jones had ball with him for so much of the game, kind of a ninth-year journeyman corner. You know, Brian, I don't think Jones runs as well as he did when he was here the last time. I think he's probably lost a step, let's say, since 2012 when he led the NFL in touchdown receptions. And he didn't have a lot of speed to spare to begin with. But Jones is just so unique, Brian. He's so crafty. You saw the back shoulder touchdown, or the one where he went up over over ball, shoulder to get it on the first one. Even, you know, when Rodgers had the free play, I think it was somewhere in the middle of the second quarter, and he took the shot downfield to Jones. I actually think Ball got a finger on that, and Jones still found a way to bring it in. He's a guy, Jones, that is, Brian, who certainly was plagued and hurt early in his career by drops, but he's always had this knack for, you know, the high degree of difficulty, circus-like catch. You saw him again yesterday. Even Brian early on when he caught that little 3-yard out pattern on the tip of his fingertips that he dove for to get the one first down to keep the drive going. He has a real knack for making the extremely difficult catches. And I think because of the fact, Brian, he probably doesn't run like he did, say, in 2012 or something like that. That's probably how a lot of his catches are going to wind up being. You're not going to see James Jones flying free down the field having separated from a corner. That's probably not going to happen. But Rodgers believes on these 50-50 balls, and let's be honest, I think that's what most of them are going to be, because teams aren't going to double-team James Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get a lot of 50-50 balls, and Rodgers has total belief that on those balls, James Jones is going to come down with it. And I think, like you saw yesterday, that's a pretty good gamble by the quarterback.
One of his other targets, Rodgers praised Randall Cobb yesterday for playing through pain. Did it appear to you at all that Cobb was limited by that shoulder sprain?
That's probably a fair word. I don't think they probably utilized and maximized him to the degree they would have if he was 100%, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I even saw some of the short underneath stuff. They had some plays designed to keep him clean where Corliss got out in front and really let convoys of blockers and things like that. I do think they were being protective of Cobb. To be honest, Brian, you know, if that was my football team, I wouldn't even play Randall Cobb yesterday, and I would have made sure he was as close to 100% as possible for this week coming up against Seattle, which I think we can all agree is, you know, the biggest regular season game we've seen in Lambeau Field in the better part of two decades. My belief, Brian, is they would have been fine without Cobb yesterday. Chicago has improved. There's no doubt they're far better coached right now, and they're utilizing their playmakers. But I don't think Green Bay necessarily needed Randall Cobb to win that game. But give Cobb a ton of credit, because there's no doubt. And he even said late in the game, he was definitely sore and felt a little bit beat up. He'll need the full week of recovery time. It'll be interesting to see how much and how often we will practice him this week, because he's going to be, I'm sure, vital and used a lot more, Brian, I would assume, this week against the Seahawks than he was last week against the Bears. But give Randall Cobb major props for, you know, fighting through that injury and playing a full game yesterday, because I think a lot of people would have set that game out.
Yeah, and hopefully another week to prepare here, week to rest, will get him in even better shape for the Seahawks game. To give the other side of the football their share of attention, where would this Packers team, this Packers defense, be without Clay Matthews? Because he was quite the hero in the Bears game.
Yeah, and even with Clay, Brian, I think they've got a lot of work to do, and they're still, at best, it appears to me, a mid-level defense in the National Football League, especially when it comes to stopping the run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to answer your first question, you know, I mean, Clay Matthews is, I know he's, at least nationally, Brian, I think he's kind of been forgotten about a little bit the last couple of years due to injury and maybe the position switch and things like that. You don't hear his name bandied around quite as much anymore. At least I don't. And, you know, when they talk about the great defensive players in the National Football League, but boy, he's without question the best player they have on that side of the ball. And he does have a knack for the big play. That's two straight years he's made pretty big interceptions down in Chicago. Brian, the amount of ground he covered, not just the read on the interception from Cutler when Cutler was looking for Bennett. You know, first of all, it was an unbelievable read by Matthews. But then, I mean, if that was Sam Barrington, for example, it's not an interception. Sam Barrington can't cover that amount of ground that fast. And that's not a slam on Sam Barrington, because the overwhelming majority of inside linebackers don't run like Clay Matthews.
Yeah.
And the fact Matthews was able to cover that amount of ground, you know, read the play, diagnose, and then have the hands to pick off that ball. Yeah, I mean, it was an off-the-charts play just in terms of intelligence and athleticism. I think Green Bay's defense probably, you know, allows 4 to 7 points more a game if Clay Matthews is not on the field. Now, You know, if I'm down Capers today, I'm pretty worried about my run defense. I'm probably a little worried about Sam Shields, although he has a clunker every now and again and usually seems to bounce back. I'm a little bit worried about how Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix continues to miss tackles, I think, in space. That's a concern of mine. They were much better in the second half, but my concern, Brian, would be, you know, I honestly think at the end of the season, we're not going to look at the final rankings and see Chicago in the top 10 in a lot of categories.
Yeah.
And I think yesterday Chicago kind of had their way for the majority of that football game with Green Bay's defense. So what's going to happen now when you see an elite offense? That would be a real concern of mine if I'm Dom Capers.
Yeah, hopefully the return of Morgan Burnett and LaTroy Guyon will help at least a little bit to this Packers team. But we're talking to Rob Reichel, author of Leaders of the Pack, here on a Monday morning at Railbird Central on 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. All right, Rob, let's get to the book. I know, of course, it's about Rodgers, Favre, and Starr, but give us the lowdown and an inside look into the premise of the book.
Well, yeah, thanks, Brian. It really is a unique look at kind of a quarterback trios through NFL history. You know, we were looking for an interesting compare and contrast kind of book when it came to Packer quarterbacks, and my publishers were talking about, well, you know, what if we compare Favre to Rodgers and X to Y and Y to Z, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, you know, at the time we were having this discussion, Brian, Rodgers had only been a starter from 08 to 13, so mm-hmm. 6 seasons. You know, Brett obviously had 16. Bart Starr had 16. And I kind of made the counter-argument, well, it might be fun to compare, you know, the great career of Starr to Favre. And then we started exploring a little bit deeper, and we thought, well, God, look at these three together. You know, it's three already remarkable. You know, two are done. One is in the midst of being a Hall of Fame career. You know, you're talking about three guys here with just impeccable, unbelievable resumes. And we started kind of comparing them to the guys in the rest of the league. And there's a lot of teams, Brian, with two terrific quarterbacks, but just nobody has the depth of Green Bay. Mm-hmm. You know, Pittsburgh has two great ones, obviously, with Bradshaw and his four Super Bowls, and Big Ben now with two, Montana and Young in San Francisco. But when these other teams, Brian, have to dig in and throw that third quarterback on the table there, it's a runaway for Green Bay. And the whole premise and point of the book is kind of just to let Packer fans know and show Packer fans maybe – you know, if somehow this has been forgotten, the quarterback play you have had in Green Bay and primarily at Lambeau Field is as good, and it is number one. It's a runaway number one, Brian, for the best in the history of the National Football League. And I think people forget that at times, or it gets overlooked. And, I mean, it's an unbelievably fortunate fan base, Brian, to have had the trio of Starr, Favre, and Rodgers to go through there. And it's why, you know, they have the most world championships. And, you know, you've got the, what are we looking at? Brett with three MVPs, Aaron with two, Bart with one. So you've got the six MVPs. Brett's got pretty much every, or at least had every passing record when he left. Aaron's got the all-time quarterback rating mark. Bart's got the best playoff winning percentage in the history of football. I mean, it's you know, with guys with at least a certain number of starts, I think he's 9-1, Brian, in the postseason. It's just a remarkable trio. And when you line them up against the 49ers or the Cowboys or the Steelers, teams who have had terrific quarterbacks in play, Green Bay really does win the day.
How much attention do some of the other quarterbacks get? Because, I mean, you know, for the Packers have had some other pretty good quarterbacks too. When you talk about Arnie Herber's in the Hall of Fame, albeit, you know, he played in, you know, a couple generations ago. Lynn Dickey was very prolific in the 80s, and even Don Majkowski was very good for the brief amount of time he was in Green Bay. Do those get brought up at all too?
You're 1,000% right. You know, unfortunately, we had to cut it off at some point and not go deeper than three.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys probably don't get their due, Brian, inside the book. But you know what is fun, I think, for readers is we have, you know, really lengthy chapters on Brett, Bart, and Aaron, not just on their careers, but some off the field stuff too, just who they were as people and what kind of made them the great players they were in terms of where they came from and how they got to this point in their lives. So I think Packer fans will really enjoy those about their quarterbacks, but then kind of on a larger scale, more the macro of it all, Brian, you know, we have chapters on the other 27 quarterbacks then that are inside the top 10 list. Every team's got three. So,
okay.
You know, if you were a Dan Fouts fan with San Diego, or you were a Ken Stabler fan with Oakland, and you were a Drew Bledsoe fan, whatever, with the Patriots, your guys are in there. So, you know, if you're a 14-year-old kid or something like that, Brian, and you want to learn a lot about NFL history, you know, this is a great way to do it. You're going to learn about a lot about these other quarterbacks and what made them so great in their respective cities and the success that their teams had, on top of what you're going to learn about this Packer trio.
I think it's cool that the foreword is written by Favre himself and the preface was written by Ron Wolf. What was it like getting them involved in the project in a small way?
Fantastic. You know, they were unbelievable with their time. Brian, Brett Favre called me one night and we were on the phone for over 3 hours. It was just sensational. You know, to pick his brain on a million different things that I wanted to find out from him for his chapter in the book. Aaron Rodgers was very gracious with his time. He gave me a good chunk of time last season on a Tuesday, which is normally his off day, but he made some time to sit down and do the book. Ron Wolf was great. Ron even helped me a little bit put together the list, Brian, of where certain quarterbacks should rank and where certain teams should rank. Obviously a slight level of bias from Ron, but I think it's a no brainer that the that the Favre star Rodgers trio comes number one. And
but even he worked with a guy like Ken Stabler way back when.
Absolutely. No one knows the Raider organization better than Ron. And what was so great about Ron, Brian, is he had seen so many of these guys maybe play firsthand. And I talked to a number of former NFL executives too, who have maybe seen these guys. You know, I grew up and I would watch a little bit of Roger Staubach or Burt Jones or some of those guys from the late 70s and early 80s before I really knew football. But, you know, those guys were 30, 40, 50-year-old men at the time, scouts who understand how to watch football. I mean, you understand. You watch football a lot different when you're 40 than you do when you're 15 or 20. And and so to talk to these guys and to get a firsthand account of, you know, a Sammy Baugh, a Joe Theismann, a Sonny Jurgensen. I mean, you name the quarterback. It was a treat, and they were sensational in helping me kind of decipher and sort through who should go where, and this person maybe shouldn't be on a list, and this person was better than he's given credit for. And I kind of threw that all in the blender then, Brian, and was able to put together the list and just get a lot of good accounts from former NFL front office guys who have seen a lot of these guys play. Ron Wolf kind of at the center of that in terms of helping me put together. So, yeah, to get Favre and Wolf involved in this and for them to be gracious enough to agree, you know, to do the foreword and the preface was really exciting for me and I think for Triumph folks in general.
I mentioned earlier, I think this is the third time we've had you on to promote a book. You wrote the one specifically on Aaron Rodgers after the Super Bowl XLV victory. You wrote the one in conjunction with Leroy Butler, and now this one. What's it been like to team up with Triumph Books on so many projects?
Just sensational. They're really forward-thinking, Brian. I mean, even they're always a year or two out, like, all right, if the Packers win the Super Bowl, we're going to do this, and if this happens, we're going to do that. So, you know, they're never caught, really, where they have to react. They're more proactive in terms of some of the thinking they always have going on, which is nice from an author standpoint then, you know, to get the necessary time maybe to do some of these projects and books. They're absolutely terrific, Brian. You know, when it comes to promotion and the marketing of the books, which is wonderful from an author standpoint. And again, they have a lot of really, really great people and smart people that work there. A lot of terrific ideas in terms of where the next project can come from. And, you know, Brian, I think they just kind of get the uniqueness and kind of the special nature of the Packer franchise and organization that, you know, that the fan base over there and really nationwide kind of loves these books and these projects. And it does. It kind of capsulizes everything that goes on. You know, I think if you're a diehard Packer fan, you're reading a lot that goes on about your team probably on an hourly and maybe on every 10-minute basis. You're updating your website to find out the latest news. But there was always something kind of special or unique about having it all packaged there for you inside a book. And, I think that's been real helpful in terms of, you know, where we wanted to go with some of these projects. And then to get a fan base, Brian, that's so passionate like that, it's always fun to write for them and to kind of do work for them.
All right. So where to get the book then? Again, what's the preferred method for people to go purchase it?
Well, there's a few different ways, Brian. It's in all bookstores now. You know, so the Barnes and Nobles of the world and most bookstores you can find it at there. I know we live in an online world, so if it's easy for people, jump to Amazon.com or TriumphBooks.com. And Brian, if people want signed copies, they can certainly reach out to me too on via email or Twitter. And I'm just Rob Reichel when it comes to the Twitter account, or if you're at email, it's RobReichel@gmail.com. And so they can get a signed copy from me that way also. So there's a few different ways, Brian, for people to get the book. And I would encourage them, because I think it's a fun read. And with the holidays, you know, getting a little bit closer, I think it's a wonderful gift for that brother-in-law or that neighbor that is a crazy Packer fan in your family.
That's perfect. Before we let you go, Rob, because you mentioned it before, this is a huge game. I'm going to ask you for a prediction on a Monday for the Seahawks game. I don't know if you maybe got a prediction already, but what's to look forward to here this week?
No, I actually had to submit predictions already for the magazine for Packer Plus, Brian, and I sent one in this morning. I went with Green Bay 30-27. I think Green Bay is going to come out and play with a lot of emotion early, Brian, and maybe get up two scores. Seattle's too good to go away. I think they'll hang around and they'll be in the game until late. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Brian, has struggled against the Seahawks. In his last three outings, his passer rating is just over 67. And they lost the one Hail Mary game in what? I guess that would have been 2012. And they lost the NFC Championship, obviously, that got away in two nail-biting games. FCL, the other game to open last year, the 36-16 game, as we know, wasn't close. I think Brian Rodgers plays a lot better at home at Lambeau Field, and I hate to make it sound that simple and that trite, but if Rodgers has a quarterback rating of 90 or 100, I don't see a way Green Bay loses this game, because they've been in two of those three games, Brian, you know, right until the end, when Rodgers has been definitely subpar with those passer ratings around 67. That if he's a lot better, Brian, and I think that fan base is going to be off the charts. I don't think you're going to see a fan base this crazy in Green Bay since Dallas came to Green Bay in 97 and they ran him out of the building 45-17 that day. I don't anticipate a blowout, because I don't think these Packers are quite good enough to blow people out yet. But I do think they win the game. And I think at the end of the year, we're going to look back because, I mean, really, Brian, think about it. It's a two-game swing. Green Bay would be 2-0. Seattle would be 0-2. But really, Green Bay would have almost a three-game lead because they have head-to-head the tiebreaker against Seattle. So, I mean, if you think of the importance in that context, I mean, the importance of this game is almost off the charts to put Seattle in such a huge early hole that if you want to host the NFC Championship game, God, this Sunday night's the night to start, you know, heading toward that, isn't it?
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one, to say the least. Rob, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. We're going to go send people to go get Leaders of the Pack, and thanks for your time.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, take care. Rob Reichel, author of Leaders of the Pack, joining us here at Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well, as we continue on with the next segment of the show.
Packers news of the day.
Yesterday, the Packers beat the Chicago Bears 31-23. And to get my two cents on the game and what transpired and what happened, kind of from the using our Chips report as a roadmap for kind of a recap of yesterday's game. The blue chip players yesterday were James Jones and Clay Matthews. And I really think James Jones is kind of the star of the week for the Packers for you know, basically two teams got to be kicking themselves for getting rid of him. Or you know, that they have themselves to blame, I think, because James Jones is obviously, as we talked about with Rob Reichel, he's not the greatest athlete in the world. He's not a deep threat. He's not going to beat cornerbacks with his speed. But the Packers just know how to use him, how to utilize him, how to put him in position to succeed. And he's obviously got his strengths that can't be understated. One being his strength, his actual physical strength. I think he's very strong for a wide receiver. But just his knowledge and route running and his savviness that he knows. He just has that connection with Aaron Rodgers. He knows where to be at the right times. And it showed. It's almost like he never left when he caught what really could have been. He also had the touchdown nullified by a holding penalty. It could have been more than two touchdowns he scored, including another one later in the game as well, as the Packers were driving in the fourth quarter. So to put this in perspective, I think it's remarkable what James Jones did on basically 6 days of preparation. Yeah, I know he was in training camp with the New York Giants, but he wasn't practicing with the Packers and getting his timing down with Aaron Rodgers, you know, for a whole off season and a whole training camp. Had 6 days and did a remarkable job. Kudos to James Jones. He's the player of the week, in my humble opinion, and just the really the story of the week. Clay Matthews gets the other blue chip, and I really think he had a fantastic game yesterday because, I mean, you saw him, first of all, looking very, very comfortable at that inside linebacker spot, at, you know, basically heading into his first full season playing that position and looking good at it and looking good in every phase of the game. Obviously coming up with basically the game-clinching interception of Jay Cutler, which is just has to be feel great if you're a Packers fan, if you're a Packer for that matter, for Clay Matthews to intercept, you know, Jay Cutler in his own stadium and just kind of continue that run of dominance against him that's, you know, been in place for now, gosh, going on a decade, getting there. And hopefully it continues. But Clay Matthews looking good in not only pass coverage, but rushing the passer and in run support, running down Matt Forte in pursuit, probably saving what might have been a touchdown run had Clay Matthews not caught up to him. And that's just, he is so good in pursuit that he's just able to run ball carriers down so often. And then you'll remember, too, that Clay Matthews, on the very forgettable series that the Packers have when Sam Shields was first called off sides on a field goal attempt and then later had the holding call in the end zone, that holding call nullified Clay Matthews kind of inducing a holding call by the Chicago Bears. So, I mean, it ended up being an offsetting penalty. But, I mean, that was a big play there, too, for Clay Matthews to get, you know, could have pushed the Chicago Bears 10 yards back and maybe forced them to, had it not been nullified, forced them to a field goal instead of getting what was eventually a touchdown. Clay Matthews played so well yesterday that he gets the blue chip performance. The red chips, Aaron Rodgers and Julius Peppers, and on any other day, Aaron Rodgers would probably be in the blue chip category. He almost did nothing wrong. I guess the simple fact that maybe it wasn't the statistically great performance, although the passer rating was off the charts because Aaron Rodgers was so efficient. He had less than 200 yards passing, but to no fault of him, he gave what he took what the defense gave him. Aaron Rodgers, you know, connecting on many passes out in the flats as the Bears defense played a lot with the two safeties back and the Packers had to dink and dunk their way down the field quite a bit, which they're very capable of doing and have been doing for several years. When they've had to, basically. And Aaron Rodgers looked great, you know, completing what was it, 18 of 23 passes, three touchdowns compared to, again, zero interceptions. The ability of him to avoid the turnovers is, again, remarkable. And to do that on the road, nonetheless, and in hostile territory at Soldier Field, to have a 3-0 touchdown-to-interception ratio, remarkable by Aaron Rodgers. Julius Peppers getting the other red chip, the former Bear facing his former team, coming up with 1.5 sacks yesterday. Basically being the only player that really provided a consistent pass rush for the Packers. And Clay Matthews could, but he was lining up at inside linebacker a lot and not frequently rushing the quarterback. And B.J. Raji, credit to him, got his first sack since 2011 when he got the half sack with Julius Peppers. And good for him, good for that. But Julius Peppers, placing pressure on Jay Cutler and almost had the strip sack with the fumble recovery early in the game in the first quarter there, end up being reversed. And rightfully so, it was the right call. Cutler's knee was down. But still, I mean, to think that play happened on a third down, it forces a fourth down, forces a punt. Julius Peppers was, very good yesterday. And again, defying age, here at 35 years old now, showing that he's not, limited still. You worry a little bit that he'll wear down late in the season or wear down if he's asked to play too many snaps. But for the time being, for the moment being, Julius Peppers worth every penny. Your cow chips, Sam Shields and Ha Ha Clint Dix, referenced it earlier, Sam Shields, maybe the worst game of his professional career, and especially, it was without a doubt the worst one series of his professional career when he was called off sides on the field goal. So the Bears get an automatic first down and then, eventually score on the drive. But yeah, later in the series, though, he gets called for the holding in the end zone, which nullified, which would have been a Bears holding penalty in the offensive backfield. And, that was, a comedy of errors right there. But Sam Shields got, beat several times in the game, missed a few tackles as well. Just a poor, poor performance for the Packers cornerback. He did end up breaking up the one pass in the end zone, which was nice, which was good. But it was the one highlight among several lowlights for Shields on the day. And a really forgettable performance for him against the Chicago Bears on Sunday. And Ha Ha Clint Dix coming up with the other cow chip, basically because of his tackling, if nothing else. And it's unfortunate that this is becoming a recurring theme, because Ha Ha Clint Dix is so aggressive. You just wish if he were able to be a form tackler and just get the guys down, how good he would be, because, I mean, he's flying everywhere. He's just missing the tackles. If he were making these tackles, they would be impressive. But he's, anybody can see it by now. It's not like this was a rare occurrence. It's time after time, ducking the head, not seeing the target, and then they go flying by like Jay Cutler did. When you're missing tackles on Jay Cutler, who's not exactly a speed merchant, things aren't really going well for you. And that was the case with Ha Ha Clint Dix yesterday. Perhaps Sean Richardson's well-timed blitz in the fourth quarter of the game there on a fourth down that forced a turnover, maybe that only saved him the indignity of being included in the cow chips, because he also had a poor game, including a 15-yard penalty, including missing an open... I shouldn't say missing the tackle, but he just is so slow in the open field. He was kind of at fault on the Bears' first touchdown drive of the game there. So not a good game from him, but at least he came up with the well-timed blitz at the end to force a turnover on downs. So we do give him credit for that. But I am concerned a little bit, especially as we talked about earlier, with the Packers, particularly their run defense. And maybe things will improve. You get Morgan Burnett back. You get LaTroy Guyon back. Dayton Jones as well. I don't know how much he's going to help you in the run game. But him and Sam Barrington, if he was healthy, all these are going to help against the run. And hopefully the Packers get a little bit better, and they could use these guys next. I mean, they're not going to get LaTroy Guyon back next week. Hopefully you can cross your fingers and they'll get Burnett and Barrington back. But it's going to be tough for the Packers to stop Marshawn Lynch in that run game this upcoming Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. This will be a big, big game for the Green Bay Packers, no doubt about it. So there's basically your kind of reaction to Sunday's game. And with our next segment,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Monday, it's talk show circuit day. So what happens is there's like, five, six talk shows on Monday alone in the Green Bay area. The day after a game I think the Packers, they come into work and they review the film and things like that. But it's not a strenuous day for the players. They don't practice or anything. Maybe they do, rehab or whatever. But James Jones, though, this is the one I'd be looking forward to. He appears on Inside the Huddle on Fox 11 television in Green Bay on Monday night. Records live from Burkle's one block over, which is right at The Truth in Advertising, one block over from the stadium at Lambeau Field on Monday at, I believe the time is 5 o'clock, 5:30 p.m. Central Time. We got it all in today's Packers calendar at 24/7 Sports if you want to check that out for details. That's the one I'd be watching, because love to hear from James Jones the day after his big performance against the Bears, his two touchdown performance and his return to Green Bay. That'll be a lot of fun to watch. But shows all over. Let's see, we got Micah Hyde is the guest on Clubhouse Live at PackersNews.com, streaming online. Let's see. TJ Lang has a rookie, Ty Montgomery, and how good did Ty Montgomery look on kick returns yesterday? He's the guest on In the Huddle on the Woodward Radio Network at 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time. I already said Micah Hyde. Brett Hundley is the guest on The End Zone on the ESPN Radio affiliates in Milwaukee and Madison, and streaming online at ESPNWisconsin.com. I believe that's at 6 or 6:30 p.m. And then you've got the fifth quarter. Defensive lineman Mike Pinnell going to be the guest on the fifth quarter. I believe Mike Pinnell making his first career start yesterday. And that on WTAQ in Green Bay. In addition to the recordings of the Mike McCarthy Show and the Packers Live with Larry McCarron on Mondays inside the Lambeau Field atrium. All sorts of Packers talk shows. Monday night, check them out at our Packers calendar post at 24/7 Sports. It's all can be found there. And head coach Mike McCarthy with his day after game press conference at 4 p.m. as well, streamed online at Packers.com. So looking forward to those things today. And looking forward to getting ready for the Seattle Seahawks starting tomorrow. So it's a fun week ahead of us, folks. A big, big, big opening season opening game, and an even bigger week, too, as the Packers face the team they lost to in the NFC Championship last year. So will be a lot of fun this week. We'll see you later, folks, though. Have a good Monday, a victory Monday. Should be easy to have a good Monday today. So we'll see you later. We'll be back again on Wednesday, our usual Wednesday guest, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com will be joining us 8:30 a.m. Central Time every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. And my call to action, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywalls. Just give us a rating on iTunes. We'd be really, really appreciative if you would do that. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Break, Build, Burn by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.